The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, guys, just a few preliminaries so we all understand the procedural posture. This case comes before the court on Howard's motion to dismiss. On October 8th, the Township of Chestnut Hill filed a complaint against Jamie Howard alleging nuisance and violation of the township's order dated August 23, 2010, requiring removal of the outside storage of certain alleged nuisance property from Howard's lawn. Howard promptly filed a motion to dismiss the complaint, alleging that the township has failed to state a claim for which relief can be granted. Both parties have stipulated to the material facts in the case, which are those from the closed memo problem. All rise. Of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Judge Figley presiding, is now in session. God save the Commonwealth and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Call your pen.
All right, it's counsel for the defendant here.
Good evening. May it please the court, my name is Julia Colarusso, and I represent the defendant, Jamie Howard. Your Honor, at the outset, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Thank you. My client respectfully requests that the township's complaint be dismissed in its entirety because even taking the township's allegations as true, the facts in the record are insufficient to warrant a finding that her property rises to the level of a nuisance under Pennsylvania law. The simple existence of unregistered vehicles on Howard's property is an insufficient basis to require my client to remove them from her land. As the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania decided several decades ago in Commonwealth v. Hanslick, a second-class township like the township of Chestnut Hill cannot deprive a resident of items on his or her property unless it shows that, taking into consideration all of the actual conditions on the land, the items constitute a nuisance in fact. And to establish a nuisance in fact, the township must be able to show not only the presence of abandoned cars, but also other conditions such as vermin or dangerous material that demonstrate actual harm or danger to the community.
Do you contend that the township can't regulate eyesores?
No, Your Honor. My client firmly supports the township's ability to regulate land use through its nuisance ordinance. What my client contests is the application of the Chestnut Hill Township nuisance ordinance to her particular facts. None of the facts in the record indicate that my client's yard endangers the health of the Chestnut Hill community, poses a danger to anyone in her neighborhood, or interferes with anyone's enjoyment of his or her own land. First, Your Honor, the record shows that Howard has never received any complaints about her artwork from her neighbors, and that she has maintained a very positive relationship with them, and that they've actually shown a degree of admiration for her artwork. They've asked her to give guided tours and lessons, which just goes to show that she has maintained a very amicable relationship with them. Second, the township cannot show that the items pose a risk of harm. There has been no reported injury to date on her property in connection with these items. But more importantly, the potential for injury is quite remote.
The potential for injury is remote because
she stores the items at least 25 feet from the property line, both the cars and any car parts that she extracts from the cars. And in addition, that means that they do not closely abut any public sidewalk or any public street.
So they're 25 feet from the sidewalk or the street.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But they're broken, aren't they? As I look at the picture, it's apparent that the convertible is open, and it appears that its windows are broken.
That is correct, Your Honor, but in past cases, for example, Talley v. Borough of Traynor, the car parts, the potentially dangerous car parts, actually crossed over onto a public right-of-way such that any passerby could not literally avoid them. The person would have to step over the material. Whereas in our case, they are 25 feet from the property line, and they are not strewn about in any way. The parts are neatly stacked next to Howard's garage. And the cars just do not rise to that same level.
Is there a fence around the property?
It is an unfenced property, Your Honor.
All right. Are there rabbits in the area?
My client has noted that recently a small family of rabbits has taken up residence in a hollowed tree stump near one of the vehicles, but there is no connection, and the record doesn't show any connection, between the vehicles and the arrival of the rabbits themselves.
Well, as I look at the picture, it's apparent that some of the vehicles are surrounded by high grass, presumably because it's difficult to mow, and that would provide a kind of a safe place for rabbits to come and breed, wouldn't it?
To date, Your Honor, they have not infiltrated the vehicles. They have remained in the tree. And
well, they haven't remained
rabbits,
in the tree.
Rabbits do not pose the same level of danger that we have seen in past cases. For instance, in Bradley v. Township of South Londonderry and Scott v. Commonwealth, where there was an abundance of rats, vermin, snakes, groundhog, mosquitoes, those types of animals living actually within the vehicles themselves.
Well,
these types of animal, yes?
Scott specifically mentions groundhogs.
Yes.
What's the difference between a groundhog and a rabbit as far as disease, pestilence, and vermin goes?
I would say groundhogs are probably as innocuous as a family of rabbits, but in addition to the groundhogs in that case, there are also snakes, mosquitoes, and rats, which are obviously of an entirely different degree in their ability to transmit disease, carry disease, and just generally cause an annoyance to neighboring property owners.
Okay. Now, in the Bradley case, the court mentioned eyesores. I asked you about that at the beginning, and I don't think I got a very solid answer to it. Can the county find that something is an eyesore and that make it a nuisance in fact?
The case law has never relied on just that element alone to hold something to be a nuisance in fact. What the court seemed to zero in on much more heavily is the ability of the items to attract and serve as a haven for rodents and their ability to pose a potential danger to neighboring residents.
I understand you want to talk about rodents, but I'm trying to pin down this eyesore thing. If we had cars that fit within the technical definition of a junk vehicle that were immobile and lacked state certifications but were kind of classics and were kind of put up as monuments or small statues about what cars can be, that would be one thing. But frankly, look at these pictures. These are pretty ratty-looking cars.
Just based off of the purpose behind the CTNO, the township's main concern when it, you know, would talk about an eyesore is the ability of that eyesore to drive down property values in the neighborhood. And in our case, there's no evidence that property values are declining.
There's no evidence either way, is there?
Well, to the contrary, there is evidence of appreciation in property values. A home two doors down from Ms. Howard recently sold for $415,000, whereas a home two blocks away sold for, I believe, $375,000. And the home that sold for more, critically, the property owner actually credited Howard's artwork and her presence in the neighborhood with the high selling price.
Was one of these homes four or five bedrooms and the other two or three bedrooms? I mean, I don't know how we can do comparables with just the identification that there were two homes.
They are fairly comparable, and the...
Where is that in the record? Just because they're within two blocks of each other?
Just based on my client's observations, the homes do appear to be comparable, but more significantly, it's just an indication that homes near her property have not depreciated due to the presence of her art project or her work on the art project.
Do we know how much these homes sold for when they were bought by their present owners?
The two homes that I mentioned?
Yes, ma'am.
The home closer to Ms. Howard's property sold, I believe, for $415,000.
Oh, no, no. Before the previous owner. What did the previous owner
buy? Oh, no, Your Honor, no.
So we don't know whether they've appreciated by how much.
That's correct.
Now, this property's near a school, isn't it?
It's nearby a school, yes.
And school children go to and from?
To the school, yes.
So they see these vehicles because they're unscreened, right?
Presumably, yes.
Isn't this a danger to the children of the area?
Well, I would compare the situation again to that of Tally v. Borough of Trainer, where the car parts that the children encountered were literally on the sidewalk, crossing over onto the public sidewalk, so that the children literally had no way to avoid them, whereas in this case...
As I understand what you're saying is if the children could be scraped as they were walking on the sidewalk, that would be a danger, but you don't perceive a danger in having open cars with broken windows in a place where the children can have ready access just by walking less than 10 yards off the sidewalk?
The record reflects that there has never been, that no one has ever crossed onto Howard's property.
Is that what, I thought he just said that he wasn't aware of anybody having done so.
Or having touched any of his property.
So he's really not in a position to say that kids don't go there after dark or when he's busy in his studio.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, I would suggest that these cars are somewhat different from the type of attractive items that are normally that normally draw the attention of children, such as a swimming pool or a jungle gym or something along those lines. There's nothing to indicate that these children are particularly drawn to, that they would be more drawn to Howard's property because of the vehicles than another neighbor who keeps a vehicle on their property, in their driveway, for instance.
Except that the ones open all the time and apparently with broken windows. But continue.
So I would just like to add that there's nothing in the record that shows that Howard's items have caused blight or property value deterioration. The record indicates that there's no trash or stray parts strewn about Howard's land and that they have not become the home of rats, mosquitoes, or any other animal that's known to annoy residents in the area. Once again, I'd just like to emphasize that Howard comports with the purpose of the CTNO in the sense that he is not causing any type of public health hazard, and it has not been shown that he has caused any damage to neighboring property values. I'd also just like to add that Howard is keeping the items for a finite period of time for a legitimate purpose in the sense that she is using them in her professional artwork as opposed to just letting them accumulate for a number of years for no established reason or purpose. She's an acclaimed avant-garde artist who specifically has a specific interest in environmental issues, and she's actively recycling these materials that would otherwise be thrown away. So in conclusion, Your Honor, my client, Jamie Howard, moves for the dismissal of the township's complaint because the facts in no way support a nuisance in fact finding. Even accepting the township's worst characterization of my client's property, as we must do at this juncture, the township simply cannot establish a nuisance in fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Colarusso.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Elizabeth Keith, and I represent the Township of Chestnut Hill, the plaintiff in this matter. Your Honor, the plaintiff opposes the motion to dismiss on simple grounds that the motion is procedurally premature. The court is well aware of the standard for granting a motion to dismiss. That is, taking all the allegations in the complaint as true, the plaintiff has failed to state a cause of action and cannot prove any set of facts that would entitle the plaintiff to relief. In this case, the Township of Chestnut Hill has sufficiently alleged facts in its complaint to prevail against Ms. Howard on the claims of nuisance. Thus, the plaintiff respectfully requests that the court deny defendant's motion and allow this case to proceed to a jury and to discovery, which will hopefully uncover many of those questions the court was inquiring about regarding property values and other matters.
So what are the, just outline them for me very briefly, the facts that you think the complaint establishes?
All right, Your Honor, I think the facts really come down to two categories here. So the township would like to draw your attention to two main factors that create, in this case, a public hazard or a potential for a public hazard. One is the condition of the offending property. The second is the danger that's posed to the community. So first, Your Honor, let's look at the offending property in question. Beginning in August of 2009, the defendant started accumulating unregistered, deteriorating, and non-functioning vehicles, as well as disassembled car parts.
I've read all that. What I'm asking is, what are the categories of dangers or problems that you see? Are you saying that the rabbits are a problem?
I'm saying that everything is a problem, Your Honor. If we specifically, let's take a look at these facts in relation to the cases that were mentioned by opposing counsel. First, the Bradley case and the eyesore issue that the court...
Are the rabbits a problem?
The rabbits are a problem.
All right. Tell me why the rabbits are a problem.
The rabbits are a problem for three reasons, Your Honor. One, rabbits are generally known to rapidly procreate. The numbers alone could be a problem, and they may prolong the time with which the vehicles will remain on the property. Ms. Howard has indicated that she has temporarily stopped working on the project because she does not want to disturb the rabbits. If the rabbits continue to breed, this could potentially dramatically prolong the time the vehicles remain on the property.
Is this the only rabbit colony in the township?
I presume it's not, Your Honor.
I mean, they're almost all over suburbia, aren't they?
That's true.
All right.
That's true.
Go ahead.
Moving on to my second reason, though. The rabbits in this case present a unique danger to children, because the rabbits may induce children to come onto the property, in addition to the fact that the vehicles are there, sort of creating an attractive nuisance, for lack of a better term. The third reason that the rabbits create a problem, Your Honor, is that they could signal to the court and to casual observers that the vehicles themselves provide a hospitable environment with which vermin can breed. That alone is enough to constitute a nuisance in fact.
But wouldn't that be true of any junk vehicle anywhere? Doesn't that take us almost back to a per se kind of a thing?
It could be true, Your Honor, but we're looking only at the facts in this case, and the facts in this case indicate that we do have the presence of a family of rabbits. And we don't have to wait. The court does not have to wait until rodents and groundhogs and mosquitoes start living in these vehicles in order to declare this property a nuisance.
All right. Do you maintain that because these vehicles are an eyesore, that they are a nuisance in fact?
No, Your Honor. They are much more than an eyesore. These vehicles create a danger to the public, as I've mentioned. In addition to that, they're very similar to the picture that we get from the Talley case. In the Talley case, the court noted that the parts were strewn about the property. In this case, we have a very similar picture. We not only have antiquated vehicles that are on the property in various states of disrepair, but we also have car parts. We also have appliances. We have pieces that have been taken apart by each of these items on her property. This is something that creates much more than an eyesore. It actually creates a public hazard. Some of these items could be sharp. Some of these items could be a danger in and of themselves. Further discovery is needed to determine the imminency of that danger. In addition, the case is very similar to the Bradley case, where we have photographs where that indicate that not only is there a significant overgrowth of weeds around the vehicles, but we also have vehicles that are wedged in between trees.
There is no fence or hedge around the property, as Your Honor noted, that would obstruct the public's view from these deteriorating items or that would prevent the public from entering her property. Now, opposing counsel mentioned that Ms. Howard has not seen any children in or around the property. The court has noted, however, that there is a school nearby. Children do frequent around the property to and from school. I would also like to note that Ms. Howard has indicated that she is considering inviting members from her community onto her property to give them a tour of the vehicles and the appliances and the progress that she is giving. If she does decide to do this, again, this will be creating a sense of invitation from the community, in particular to the children that may come onto the property.
You think that if she brings them on for a guided tour, that that will make the children think they can come on whenever they want?
Absolutely.
Please continue.
Your Honor, the important precedent to keep in mind here is, in fact, the Bradley case. In Bradley, the court stated that courts are not required to wait for actual injuries to occur before a condition may be adjudged a nuisance and abated. Indeed, if we look at the facts of Bradley, two of the vehicles in the Bradley case were antique vehicles. They were, in fact, registered as antiques. Four of the vehicles also had valid registration. One of the arguments from the appellants in that case were that the vehicles were not discarded because, in fact, they had current insurance on them. And the important thing to note about that is what the court's response was to that argument. And the court stated, and I'm quoting here, automobiles which have been unmoved and continuously exposed to the elements for 4 years to a decade have, in fact, been discarded. This is essentially what we have in this case. The vehicles have already been on the property for 1 year. Ms. Howard anticipates they will be on for at least an additional 2 years. We're really getting close to that four-year benchmark. And again, I think that was a benchmark that was specific to the facts of that case. But if we look at that precedent from a broader perspective, the court is essentially stating here that it doesn't matter if the vehicles have some special value or if there's some special use for those vehicles. The fact that they are on the property, exposed to the elements, and lingering about for years on end is sufficient and enough to determine that they do, in fact, create a nuisance.
So you're saying that you think these vehicles are discarded because they won't run under their own power and they've been there for a year. Is there any other facts about these particular vehicles that suggest to you that they are discarded?
The other facts with respect to these vehicles is that pieces are actively being removed. I don't know how frequently Ms. Howard removes pieces from the vehicles. She does so on a sporadic basis.
Doesn't that show just the opposite, that they're not discarded, but rather that they're being harvested?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. There is no exception for the intended use of the vehicles. Court's indulgence. In the Commonwealth versus Bulmer case, Your Honor, we had a situation where the court didn't actually reach the issue of whether or not there was a nuisance in fact, but the facts from that case indicate that the defendant in that case was trying to refurbish vehicles on the property and had 3 to 4 Volvos on the property, kind of a sporadic attempt at trying to get parts that would finish these so they would be finished products. However, in the Hanslick case, which similar to Bulmer, and then it did not reach that ultimate issue of whether there was a nuisance in fact, this was a case where the parts were being sold out of the vehicle, so they're almost a complete opposite of each other. And I don't think that in either case there's any indication from the courts that the intended use would make any difference.
In both cases, though, didn't the court rule for the defendant?
In both cases, the court did rule for the defendant because the township did not meet its burden to show a nuisance in fact. That is different from this case where the township has shown through its facts in the complaint that there is the presence of a nuisance in fact. In addition, if I could draw the court's attention to the CTNO, the Chestnut Hill Township Nuisance Ordinance,
The opposing counsel, the defense counsel, has mentioned that Hanflick stands for the proposition that a township cannot declare a nuisance per se. I would like to make one point with respect to that, and that is that that is not what the CTNO creates. The CTNO does not create a nuisance per se. And the reason for that is because the CTNO has a definition of nuisance that specifically says, quote, any unreasonable, unwarrantable, or unlawful course of conduct or use of private or public property which causes or may cause injury, damage, hurt, inconvenience, interference, and it goes on. So Chestnut Hill has taken that extra step to say not only are we declaring certain things to be a nuisance, but we're only choosing and defining those things as nuisances that in fact create or may cause this injury. That, I think, addresses the issue of nuisance in fact plainly from within the CTNO itself. But if we do go that extra step and say that...
You can read the CTNO as saying that having junk vehicles on the property is not allowed.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Does the CTNO state that it's improper to have junk vehicles on your property for an extended period of time?
Yes, it does. The CTNO...
How is that different from saying that having junk vehicles on your property is a nuisance per se?
Because what the township has done is very carefully identified those situations where the presence and accumulation of certain items, in fact, has that plus effect, has that potential to create injury and injury to the public.
Well, I understand that is a distinct argument, but as I read the CTNO, I do not see a carefully well-crafted ordinance.
Your Honor, that's not at issue today, and if that's something that the court has an issue with, certainly, well, this is up to the legislature, not the courts at any rate. So, Your Honor, in conclusion, Your Honor, the Township of Chestnut Hill respectfully requests that this court deny defendant's motion to dismiss because this is a case that rightfully belongs in the hands of the jury. Here, the citizens of Chestnut Hill. The township is burdened with a duty to protect the health, safety...
Let me know for just a second, because there's one thing I'm really concerned about. You've suggested that inviting the children onto the property might cause them to come on the property. And I don't know that that's so or that's a fair interpretation. But tell me about children generally going on property where there aren't fences and there are things of interest.
Generally, I'm not sure what you're asking. I will say that the courts in other cases, and I'm thinking specifically of, thinking specifically of the Talley case, where the court, in fact, noted that children were nearby and were going to and from school. Now, that was a case where the property directly impinged upon a sidewalk. But the court did find it significant to note that the presence of children around the area of that property was something that the court should consider as a public danger.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So the citizens of Chestnut Hill deserve to have this case, Your Honor. The township is burdened with the duty to protect the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens, as well as to preserve property values in a very difficult real estate market. To do this, the township has ordered the defendant to remove certain items from her property that violate the township's nuisance ordinance and create a danger to the public. The defendant has failed to do so, and thus the township has been forced to file suit in the courts of this commonwealth. As stated during oral argument today, the township's complaint sufficiently alleges facts that demonstrate a nuisance, in fact, exists on the defendant's property. And therefore, the plaintiff respectfully requests that this court allow this case to proceed to trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Colarusso, do you have any rebuttal?
Your Honor, I just want to very briefly touch on the Bradley case that opposing counsel referenced during her argument. The Bradley opinion at the end lists a long list of factors on which the court relied to reach its nuisance in fact finding. Interestingly, at the very end of that paragraph where it lists out those facts, it says, more significantly, neighbors testified to the existence of rodents and vermin living inside of the vehicles themselves. And I'm paraphrasing every part of that statement except the more significantly part. And I want to emphasize that only to say that it's not clear without the presence of the rats and vermin living inside of the vehicles in that case that the court would have found the same. It seemed to put a heavy emphasis on the presence of rats and vermin inside of the vehicles themselves when it made its nuisance in fact finding. And without the presence of those animals in our case, I don't think that a court could confidently find the same nuisance in fact to exist in our case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I'm going to take this matter under advisement for a few minutes and ponder
All right.
my decision.
Please be seated.
Okay, while Judge Figley is deliberating, we're going to have a little closeout of the semester of the real Jamie Howard. Jamie Howard was born in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania. She still lives there. From an early age, Jamie was interested in art. For a short time, Jamie's parents were a bit disturbed by her artwork. A short hospitalization later, Jamie's artwork returned to normal. Much of her early work focused on rabbits. As she grew older, Jamie became quite enamored with sculpture. She won first place in the local Big Berry contest. Always peace-loving and environmentally conscious, Jamie later turned to installment pieces. Jamie's pieces are sold in galleries and showrooms, not out of her home. Jamie has had two art shows. The first was in Philadelphia in 2006. Entitled Can You See Me Now?, the exhibit featured eyeglasses hanging from the ceiling. The second exhibit was in Atlantic City, New Jersey in 2009. In her early 20s, Jamie spent countless nights in front of slot machines. Entitled Loser, the exhibit featured huge slot machines made with real fruit. Jamie's most recent work is called Art for Clunkers, a turn on the Cash for Clunkers program. Jamie collects cars that were turned into the Cash for Clunkers program, as well as other car parts and appliances and transforms them into art. One person's junk is another's treasure. Currently, Jamie has four 1980s vehicles in various states of disrepair. Jamie received a letter from the township of Chestnut Hill by certified mail informing her that she is violating the CTNO by storing cars and car parts in her yard. In her yard until and if they are used in her art. Jamie does not understand the fuss. Her yard is clean. There are no rodents, well, maybe a few. Her cars are not overgrown with weeds unless you count cacti. There are hardly any car parts, at least not in comparison with the junkyard. She has not noticed much trash on her property, well, except for some of her neighbors. She has never smelled an odor on the property, but her friend Susan has. And the rabbits on her property are huge. And most of them small. Children even come onto her property for tours. Look how happy they are when they leave. Recently, this home 2 doors away saw this home 2 blocks she removes the cars from the yard, her work will be delayed.
To begin with, I'd like to compliment both counsel on a well-argued case. I was impressed by your knowledge of the record and finding kernels in all five cases. I was not persuaded by the township's argument regarding the rabbits. I think they are ubiquitous to the suburban lifestyle of anybody who lives in the township. I do not believe that there's a basis to conclude that these cars have been discarded. I think they were purchased for a specific purpose, and they are being used for that purpose. They're not like cars that someone bought to have as a car, and when it died, parked it beside the house and left it indefinitely. I was not persuaded that inviting children onto the property makes it more likely that the children will return to the property. On the other hand, I thought counsel made a good argument about the Tally case. Here we have a situation where at least one open, broken car is within 10 or 15 yards of a sidewalk in an area where there are school children and in an area where children live. I think it's not beyond even a very small surmise to expect that grade school children will be attracted to the open cars and play in them. Although Jamie Howard indicates no awareness of children being on the property, I think that it's only a matter of time before children do come. And on the basis that this poses a real danger to the children of our community, I'm going to deny the motion, and we'll proceed with the case from there. Thank you.
All rise. The Court of Common Pleas of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Judge Figley presiding, is now adjourned.
Thank you. I think counsel in this case deserve another hand. Very, very well done. If any of you have any quick questions, either for counsel as to what they were thinking about or for the judge as to what on earth he was thinking about, and please be seated if you like.
Any questions?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a question as to whether it was staged at all. Would you like to answer?